everybody. Welcome back to the Tipsy Ghost. We're your tipsy hosts, Sarah and Lindsay.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
I have finished Game of Thrones.
I'm very proud of you.
Can I just say that we've been together for a couple hours by now and you're just not saying this? Were you waiting? You were waiting.
Of course.
That was commitment.
What questions do you have?
I need to first just tell me your thoughts and feelings about the finale.
I was fine with it.
That's how I felt.
What do you mean you were fine with it? With everyone's storylines.
Okay, John goes back up north.
Great. How'd you feel about that?
He belongs up north.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Sansa belongs to be the queen of the north.
I liked Sansa's storyline. That's probably one of the few I liked.
Arya, of course, is going to go out and try and find something new.
Yes, I agree. I liked hers too.
Daenerys is dead. That was a little weird, but that's okay.
Didn't like that.
She like lost her mind.
I didn't like how they made her crazy, because the entire show we are rooting for her. Like, she's mm-hmm. the underdog. We are rooting for her. She's our heroine. And all of a sudden she turns crazy and Jon kills her. Well, and I'm just like, what in the world? Sorry, spoiler alert for anyone who has not seen Game of Thrones. You've had time.
It's been several years.
And that Jon would go through all of that just to go back to the north.
Yeah,
just go back to the wall.
His original true love is a wildling.
Yes. I mean, I wasn't really rooting for like him and Daenerys together. That I didn't care about. But I was like, he has accomplished so much just to go back to the north.
But he's with Ghost, his dog. He's with Tormund, who really grew on me throughout the show.
I love Tormund.
Mm-hmm.
My husband said the same thing. He goes, the north is where he belongs. And I was like,
it is.
Jaime. And Cersei.
I didn't appreciate how it forced you to like grow to be like, okay, I really like Jaime. Mm-hmm. And then he broke Brienne's heart and I did not care that he died at the end.
I was so mad he went back to Cersei.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was so mad that he broke her heart.
You knew he would. Like, it's not anything new.
Of course, he went back to what he knew.
He always goes back to Cersei. Mm-hmm. It's always about Cersei.
It was like we were starting to see some growth in him. Mm-hmm. Of being away from her and being his own man and all of this stuff. And then he goes back to her and I was like,
he was
a
complete dick.
I could
to Brienne.
Yeah. Wring your neck.
I hated that.
Nothing.
I hated it. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was rooting for him.
I think that him and Cersei got the ending that they deserved.
I wanted her dead, so I'm glad that she died. I wish it had been
sooner.
Not sooner, but like that it had been the result of like I wish it had been more of a showdown. Than just like her dying, like buried under.
I wish that Arya could have killed her.
Mm-hmm. Right. I wish somebody could have killed her and it wasn't just like a natural kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite episode?
I did like the Battle of the Bastards.
Such a good episode.
And I also liked the actual battle between the Night King
mm-hmm.
with and Westeros.
That was a really good episode. Getting the Night King was like, ugh.
And the fact that it happened like outside of Winterfell is,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know, kind of iconic. I finally understand what winter is.
Yeah.
I asked Sarah like a couple weeks ago. I was like, okay, but do I ever figure out what winter is and why it's coming?
Yes.
And so now I understand that.
Yes. It is a season. I'm just kidding.
Kind of. Eternal.
Did you have a ton of anxiety watching Battle of the Bastards? I was like on the edge of my seat the entire episode.
No. I kind of predicted it. I knew that Ramsay had kind of
mm-hmm.
gone his course. I knew that he was a little far off because whenever they killed off Joffrey,
mm-hmm.
he had just spiraled beyond, and that's how Ramsay was. And so I figured, if anything, Ramsay's going to die, and if not, then I have just fallen for another trap in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but in the way that he died and because of Sansa?
No, I appreciated that. I appreciated that. That she essentially saved both the battle and she was able to get her justice.
Her comeuppance. Yeah.
So what was like the most stressful episode?
Stressful was probably the battle with the Night King.
Mm-hmm. Mm, yeah, that one. There was a lot going on in that episode.
Yeah. And I now realize that, I know you guys told me, but like how much they fit into some few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of disappointment and like, how are these people ever going to come back? And then all of a sudden they do.
Yeah. Hodor.
Hodor, I really appreciate that they explained his story.
Mm-hmm. Broke my heart, though.
I cried.
Oh, for sure. I didn't cry.
Cried. Poor Hodor.
But it was sad.
My husband is watching Game of Thrones again for like the fifth time.
Okay. Now I do want to watch it again.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I probably should watch it again. I've only seen it once.
Yeah.
You got to watch House of Dragons now.
I liked House of Dragons, but Game of Thrones was way better.
I left with one question.
Yes.
I need you guys to answer.
I don't have it. She might have it better than me.
Doubt it.
How do dragons breathe fire?
Magic.
That is not even a Game of Thrones question. That is a ultimate life question.
So it shows.
Not a Game of Thrones specific question.
It shows.
When they can't.
The little hole in there.
Uh-huh.
And then it's just coming through. But it's like, I mean, are they breathing propane?
Yes.
They got fire in their hearts.
And then that little hole has like a spark.
And it, like a piece of flint.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Let's Google.
How do dragons breathe fire?
I was like,
did you like the dragons?
I did. I did it first. And honestly, I did like the ending with Drogon and
I liked the dragon.
How he just carried her away.
Yes. Dragons have, you can't laugh.
Okay.
They have a special pressurized sac in their body that is filled with a substance similar to fire in the way that it changes that comes in contact with the air. It combusts like sodium with the humidity of their breath. Or yeah. The other alternative is, it's just magic.
There we go. We were very close. I got one of them right.
It's just magic.
Okay.
That's not a Game of Thrones specific question. It's just a life question.
Not all the real life dragons.
How do mermaids breathe underwater? They don't have gills.
Their mouth. They breathe through their mouth. Let's see.
Their lungs, before you get to the lungs, are gills.
They're tiny lungs up here.
They have gills inside. It's a filter.
Ariel doesn't look like she has gills.
It's like a Brita filter, but in the trachea.
It's inside. You can't see it. Yes.
It's a Brita filter in the trachea.
It filters out the water.
Okay.
You asked.
I did. That was my bad. What you got for us tonight?
I've got a true crime.
True crime.
Yep. I want you guys to imagine France in the 1880s.
Yes, I was there. I remember it well.
Tell me about it.
It was beautiful. There was lots of good bread and wine and cheese.
There's rats everywhere.
Was the Eiffel Tower there? I don't remember. I don't think so.
Like, yeah. In the 1880s? I don't know. I could not tell you.
What were the sights and the sounds and the...
Rats. Plague.
There was the plague. Disgusting. The bubonic plague.
Smells.
Yeah, the smells were not great.
Plague in the 1600s?
The vibes were off.
I feel like there were several plagues, but I don't know, man.
There's been lots of plagues. The Black Death.
There are people dying everywhere in the streets.
Currently, as we speak.
Yes. Hygiene was not great.
Okay. Yep. Tell me it was better than what I imagine.
Modern medicine, not there. It's a miracle we survived.
You know, I was thinking that we could talk about like the scent of bread and then you guys make funny French accents talking about.
That would be offensive.
Things. Okay, let me try again. Belle is there. She's singing down the streets.
Belle is there, and so is the Hunchback of Notre Dame. He is there. He's there with his gargoyles.
And she's talking to him.
Mm-hmm. Bella's singing in the streets. She's going to go find Beast. Gaston's real pissed. There goes
the baker with his tray like always. She's smelling the bread, see?
Yes. That's Belle.
Okay.
I don't remember songs from The Hunchback of Notre Dame, so I'm failing here.
This is great, though.
Thank you.
Yeah, so imagine those things.
Okay, uh-huh. That's a lot.
And then add on...
We did not get what she was wanting.
You wouldn't have.
Okay.
This is just for fun. This, though, is a 35-year-old Chief Inspector Robert LeDrew.
Oh, I do remember him. He was very popular with the ladies.
I was there. Bobby LeDrew. All the ladies knew Bobby.
All the single ladies?
That's what we called him.
Bob.
Hey, Bob. Bob LeDrew.
He was in the prime of his career.
Yeah, he was.
This is a family show.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. So he worked in Paris, and he was responsible for the arrests of all kinds of criminals, from murderers to anarchists to conspirators.
Mm-hmm.
He's busy.
He was well known for breaking up black magic cults.
Yeah.
You should stop leading those.
That's how we know him.
He arrested me.
our friends kept getting arrested.
Yeah. Oh, it was going for me. But oh. Yeah.
Your friend named Sarah.
We had to hide in the catacombs.
Yes.
Yeah. Scary. He was also known for tracking down and imprisoning a group of political rebels.
That was not us. We were born to the magic. Who planned
to overturn the government.
Too much work.
Nope. That wasn't me.
He's good at his job. What can I say? That's why basically, the ladies like him.
Yeah, if there was a problem,
he'd solve it.
Yo.
He'd solve it.
Mm-hmm.
Ice Bobby.
Pew! That was his gun. Pew! Did it come out of your nose?
It almost did, and that is lemonade, and then whoo!
Spicy.
The ice Bobby got me. That was good.
Thank you.
LeDrew's prestige garnered his notoriety throughout the country, and it wasn't uncommon for the police in other towns to call him and ask for help with their more difficult investigations. Because of that, he didn't think twice when he was asked to come to Normandy to help with an investigation into the mysterious disappearance of some sailors. Or seamen. They
just disappeared.
Vanishing seamen.
Yep. I'm not going to make the jokes that are there.
Okay. So he heads to Normandy.
Okay.
And he gets there late at night and goes to his hotel. And he goes to bed.
Okay, great.
Can't really. I would just go to bed.
I'm like, listen, I'm tired. I'm just going to go to bed.
Yeah.
Same.
Obviously.
Yeah.
So the next morning he goes to the police station, right? Because he wants to be briefed on the vanishing seaman.
Tell me what's going on.
He's got to figure
Why
it out.
Why am I here?
But it turns out that the vanishing seaman had been downgraded because a murder happened overnight.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Takes priority.
And they're like, well, since you're here, do you want to just help us with this case? And he's like, yeah, sure.
Why not?
Seamen disappear all the time. So, therefore, the murder had been upgraded.
Yeah, they're there. And, like, they're in droves. Like, they're thick. And then, all of a sudden, they've just thinned just out.
Gone.
And they're gone.
In 72 hours or less. Still a very niche.
I will stop. You're welcome.
It's 5 days, 72 hours, but okay.
3 days is what I thought.
Nope, it's five.
So LeDrew said yes, of course he would love to help. And it turns out a Parisian dress shop owner by the name of André Monet.
Yes. Beautiful. I heard Bobby talk about him, but I never met him.
He was found murdered on the beach.
That's why he talked about it.
That makes sense.
FYI.
Mr. Monet? I would never met him.
Didn't have the chance. He was murdered on the beach.
Gone before we were there.
Like a sneeze in the wind. He was gone.
Fart in the wind.
André Monet, mm-hmm. His wife, mentioned that they had recently come to Normandy because he was in poor health and they thought the sea breezes would do wonders for him.
Ah, yes.
Turns out he had a single through and through bullet wound to his chest and that's how he died. But they couldn't find the bullet and they didn't have any suspects, so they had zero leads.
Okay, this is why they needed our friend.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Robert LeDrew.
Yep.
The only thing that they felt fairly certain of is that this wasn't a robbery because he still had cash in his pockets.
Okay.
So, fair enough.
We got to find a motive.
Mm-hmm. The presumption was that André Monet was taking a midnight stroll along the beach when he came in contact with a stranger and for some reason they got in a fight and he was shot in the chest.
A little scuffle.
So LeDrew and the other officers head to the beach to search for clues. The other officers want to find this bullet wound because they think that it's going to solve the whole case.
Right.
And then Robert, he kind of takes a more broad approach and he just walks around the beach looking for any clues that he might find.
Okay.
And so he then stumbles upon a set of footprints that are barely visible at this point. They pass by where the body was. past it, and then they end whenever you get to some stairs. So the assumption is they would take the stairs up and they're just gone.
Mm-hmm.
He then asked for plaster cast to be made of the footprints, or a footprint within the series, so that he could take a closer look at them.
Okay.
And so when the officers present him with the cast, his body language immediately changes. He appeared disappointed and dejected, and he just grabs the footprint cast and walks down the beach and just sits down. And he stays sitting there for hours, just staring at this cast.
He's throwing a silent temper tantrum.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And so eventually, after hours, he walks back to the officers and he tells them to just stop the investigation. He's like, I figured it out. Just stop. You don't even need to do anything else. And then he turns and he walks back to his hotel.
He's a smart guy.
Mm-hmm. The officers didn't really think much of it because this is kind of what he's known for. He comes in and he just solves the most bizarre of crimes, and this is his forte.
He's like the Dr. House of crimes.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Nice.
He was very similar to someone named Dr. Joseph Bell, who was the inspiration for Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
I'm with you now.
Yes.
And so Dr. Bell, the inspiration for Sherlock Holmes, was famous for being able to make broad conclusions from minute observations,
mm-hmm.
which essentially is what LeDrew did. And so these officers are like, okay, this guy's a little eccentric, but he solved the case. So
he gets the job done.
Let's just go home.
Yeah.
And so the next day, LeDrew meets them back at the beach, but this time they had found the bullet.
Ooh.
And so they showed it to LeDrew, who, again, was visibly disappointed, and he's like, I know for sure what happened to Andre Monet. And so he told the officers that the killer went to the beach in the middle of the night and encountered this stranger. Somehow their interaction turned into a fight, and then he shoots Monet and he leaves him for dead.
Okay.
And the officers were really impressed by this like savant detective, and they asked how he figured all of it out. And that's when LeDrew confesses that it was actually him who killed Andre Monet.
I was wondering when you said he was mad and disappointed.
So disappointed with himself.
He said he didn't do it on purpose, of course, and he didn't remember doing it
mm-hmm.
because he did it while he was sleepwalking.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
We've talked about this before.
He initially saw the footprints in the sand and thought that they looked a little familiar. And so that's when he wanted the cast. And so when he got the cast, he noticed that this person was missing a toe. And it's the same toe that Robert LeDrew was missing. And so that kind of really clued him in. And then he also said that, you know, he found out about the cast and the missing toe in the afternoon following the morning where he woke up and his shoes and his socks were sandy and damp. And he's like, I didn't know why, but also he was kind of in a hurry to go meet with the officers to find out about the vanishing semen.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't really think much of it until he saw that plaster cast. Whenever the officers found the bullet, after LeDrew was like, you know, stop the investigation, I've already seen it. They show him the bullet, and he had already gone back to his hotel overnight, and he saw that one of the bullets in his gun was missing.
Mm.
And so whenever they showed him the bullet, he's like, that's the same kind of bullet I use.
He's can't like, confirm. I know it.
Yeah. The police were pretty skeptical, and they looked into the evidence and like, I mean, I guess it does kind of make sense, but they really wanted to kind of do a test first. And so they decided to test the sleepwalking claim by putting LeDrew in a jail cell with a revolver that had blank rounds and then waiting to see what would happen. And so he was monitored for 24 hours, and a week goes by and nothing happened until one night he kind of gets up in the middle of the night in a daze, and the guard's watching him, and he sees LeDrew pull this revolver out from under his pillow and just point it at him and shoot him at point blank range.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily it had a blank in it, so it didn't really shoot him, but that confirmed the sleepwalking theory.
And shooting people in your sleep. Like, he's doing more than just sleepwalking. He's shooting people in his sleep.
He is. And we'll get to that. At this point in time in the 1880s, they acknowledged that he was sleepwalking. I think it probably had a little bit of help that he was this prestigious investigator.
I'm sure that did.
And so he wasn't prosecuted, but he was exiled to a small farm outside of Paris from 1887 to 1937 when he died.
Oh, wow.
And so his only visitors in those 50 years were the doctors who came, and they only came during the day, and they only came with armed guards. So he saw nobody for a long time.
50 years. He lived in solitude.
He, of course, is not the only case of homicidal sleepwalking.
Mm-hmm.
Between LeDrew's case in 1887 to 2005, there were an additional 68 cases. There's no consistency as to how they're viewed in the courts. It can end with a prosecution, or it can end with an admission to a psychiatric hospital, or it can come out to like a, well, you're acquitted, basically, because it's kind of this up in the air diagnosis. And like, how do you actually blame somebody when it's their, not their real here and now mind that's doing it? I don't think there is a good consensus. I think it's always up to the courts and how they choose to perceive it. But that is the case of Robert LeDrew, the detective who caught himself.
Wow, good job.
Thank you.
Bobby LeDrew. And
Bobby.
You know, I wondered what happened to him because we stopped hearing from him for a while.
Yeah, well, it turns out he was outed himself and he deserved it.
I heard a rumor, but I didn't think it was true until now. So thank you.
I did a similar story on homicidal sleepwalking about Christopher Fallader.
I remember that.
And it was a little more recent.
Yes. And how did that one end up?
And he went to jail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like I said, I feel like in my world, probably his prestige had a lot to do with it.
I think so.
This guy's done so much good for the crime world.
Right.
And let's just not prosecute him and just sitting in some prison somewhere. Let's just have him. He can live his own life.
He can escape.
He can escape.
We don't have to mess with him.
He just can't be around the public.
Yeah.
Permission to put on my clinical hat for him.
Absolutely.
Permission granted.
I'm wondering if it was like a case of severe PTSD where he was like vicariously like reliving some of his trauma from being like a detective, where he was dreaming of like catching bad guys or whatever he was doing as a detective and
yeah,
was
yeah.
just waking up, grabbing his gun and shooting.
Because interesting that both times he would go for a gun.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. That like he would just wake up, grab his gun and shoot. But his aim was on and everything. So like there was some part of him that was awake enough to see the target and see what was happening. But like he was maybe having a flashback of a particularly bad case.
It makes you wonder though, like, because Paris is a big city. Mm-hmm. What murders are unsolved in Paris that could have been from this guy sleepwalking?
Mm. Like how many people did he kill before that?
Yeah.
He would have got away with that one had he not solved his own case.
Turned himself in.
Maybe that was part of it too, why they exiled him. They're like, look, he solved his own case. He turned himself in. He didn't. He could have ran.
Yeah.
Nobody would have known.
Be like, oh, well, this is a weird case. I don't know. I can't do it.
Mm-hmm. And then just fled the country. Nobody would have thought anything differently.
Right.
You guys both have to take sleep aids sometimes.
We do.
Have you ever had sleepwalking problems?
No, I stay in my bed. Mm-hmm. As a nice little tucked in camper until I wake up in the morning.
So I slept walked as a child, my did entire you? Childhood. Mm-hmm. And I've mentioned like I took Ambien in high school and college and it did not work well. I hallucinated. And part of the reason I found that out is if you have a history of sleepwalking, you should never take Ambien. And that's why. So yeah, I slept walked as a child. I never left the house because I always woke my parents up because I was on the second floor and they were on the first floor. So they would hear me coming down the stairs and my mom would basically just be like a sheepdog and herd me. And she would just watch me. Like our first floor was basically a giant circle, like living room, hallway, kitchen, dining room, living room, and the staircase in the middle. And I would just walk laps around the entire first floor.
I mean, if you're anything like you are now, then your steps are not very soft.
No. And she said she would just watch me to make sure I didn't go outside, to make sure I didn't fall. And she said my eyes would be open, but nobody was home. And she goes, eventually I would just tire myself out and sit on the couch. And that's when she would try to get me back to bed.
My younger brother sleepwalked when mm-hmm. we were younger. And it was terrifying, actually. Because he would get really upset and cry. And
mm-hmm.
and then you'd have to try to direct him back to bed.
My mom said once she caught me walking and I was holding a sock and I was petting it like a dog.
Aww, maybe it was like a cat.
It was a really sweet dog.
A really sweet cat.
Or she goes, yeah. You were just walking your dog and just stroking your sock.
Aww. It's really sweet. So yes, I was a sleepwalker. It was a big problem. I grew out of it probably by like my teenage years. Once I hit puberty, I grew out of it.
I'm not going to lie. If you sleepwalk while we're having an overnight investigation.
I have not done it since I was a teenager.
Out. I'll assume you're possessed. No.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for tuning in this week to our true crime episode. You can always find us at thetipsyghost.com with our socials linked from there, or send us an email at thetipsyghost@gmail.com.
Please give us a 5-star rating and a great review anywhere you listen to podcasts. We really appreciate it, and it really does help.
All right, guys. Thanks so much. We'll catch you next week.
Okay, bye.
Bye.